What's up, Omaha Talkers? Welcome to episode 26 of Omaha Talks. I am your co-host, Parker Steele, in with co-host
Brandon Herbal.
And today, our special guest is Mr. Josh Fu. Welcome to the show.
Hello, it's nice to be here.
Okay, so Josh, you do a lot of things.
I try to.
You try to?
Yes.
But what I know you, we just met today, but we've kind of traveled in the same circles, have some mutual contacts or whatever. But you're a photographer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when did you start doing that?
Man, professionally, like kind of doing it.
When did you start putting your eye in a camera and being like, damn?
Honestly, when I was probably about, so my sister and I used to make like movies on VHS cameras, like when we were really young. I was probably, I think, about 5 years old. We did a thing on Aladdin. and that's really what sparked it. Like,
were there musical numbers in this?
There weren't any. No, damn it. No. Later it happened, I think. Yeah. There's some really weird, like, if we were to do them now, we probably would have gotten in trouble with a lot of them.
Sure.
But it was like a small town. I was in Shenandoah, Iowa for a while. My dad was still overseas. And so we just run around town. And my friends had gotten a video camera, and we're like, you know, the way we edited it was just pressing record and pause.
Sure.
And so my first interest was like cinema or film. That's what I wanted to do mainly. So, but as I got older, you know, strict Asian father wanted me to be a doctor and go to college. Ended up going to culinary school. Graduating, got really sick. And then I couldn't eat a lot of the same things. Like, I actually had, like, a meat allergy, which is weird.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
And
a meat allergy? I don't think I've ever heard of that before.
I thought they were making it up. I actually ate two cheese runzas after they told me because it was, like, my favorite thing. And I got really sick again. And so at first I had E. coli.
Oh, Jesus.
And so because that's when, like, it was, like, a big – it was trending then.
Yeah.
E. coli.
E. coli was hot. Yeah.
Hashtag E. coli.
But yeah, so later on I ended up finding out it was from a tick bite. Some sort of like a tick can cause like an allergy, you
know? Oh, Jesus.
It's really bizarre. So
how terrifying are ticks?
I just went camping literally yesterday, and all I could think about was like, I'm gonna get Lyme disease.
Yeah, or a goddamn meat allergy apparently.
Yeah.
Fuck that.
Yeah, God. It sucked. So fuck that kind of happened. I worked like a bunch of odd jobs, and but I always wanted, you know, that's like kind of, we started kind of making these little videos and stuff, like just for fun. And then YouTube came about, started making stupid videos for that. And then that kind of just led into me working at like a hospital. And I got really mad at the person that got hired because it was a total dick. And I quit and I went out into the parking lot. And I got a call from this girl, Shannon, who lived out in Seattle and worked for Hoarders, the
Shannon Beck. Shout out to Shannon Beck.
I didn't know. I don't know if I should like throw out last names or what, but yes, mutual friend.
Yeah,
very good friend. And she called me right after I quit, and she's like, "Hey, they're coming through like to do an episode. You want to like help out?" And I was like, "Okay." And so
to do an episode of Hoarders.
And
I didn't know what Hoarders was. And then I showed up. I was kind of like, you know, and I didn't know anything. They're telling me to go grab stuff. I felt dumb. But from that point, you know, I got a little money and then used that to,
what were you doing? Were you just like assistant producer?
No, I was just like a PA assistant.
Oh,
like,
okay.
You know, I just kind of like grabbed whatever they needed. And, but it was cool to see kind of like that production work. Mm-hmm. And,
okay. Let's talk about that for just a sec.
Okay.
So you get to the house.
Yeah.
Film crew there is already set up or not yet?
They were set up for the most part. I mean, I had to help kind of put lights up in the attic, which was interesting.
So you went in that place. Yeah. You were in the house.
Yes.
Let's talk about what you saw and let's talk about what you smelled.
Yeah. It, so it was weird. Like it was a smaller house and it was obviously just full top to bottom. I remember on the curtains, there was just like thick dust. Like it was just like really thick. And, the guy was not happy, you know, with anyone being there. And it's weird to see behind the scenes stuff. And
yeah.
Everyone's personalities seem to be different at times.
How so? Like, were they empathetic, or was it more like cut and dry? We're here to do a job.
They So I had a good conversation with one of the ladies there that was actually on the show, one of the doctors, and she was very caring, super caring. I think she should have had her own show, actually.
Okay.
And she was trying to just like talk through a little bit, like therapy wise, like, you know, how they kind of got there and the things they're holding on to.
Sure.
The other one wasn't as friendly, I don't think, like off camera. She just kind of, you know, I heard some jokes cracked about like kind of the people there.
About the hoarder?
Yeah. But too easy. I will say, to be fair, I guess, like the guy was not making their job easy at all.
Sure.
Like, it was pretty intense. But I just kind of, I was like a fly on the wall, which is basically what I do anytime anyway, okay. And observed. Ended up talking to the person, and actually had a really good conversation with him. Kind of talked about his family and stuff.
Yeah.
And, then just went back to work. But
you know what's interesting about hoarders is so many times in the few episodes I've seen, there's trauma involved. And you know what I mean? And like, what a strange manifestation of somebody's trauma. They're like, I can't throw this away. You know, like it's so strange, but common.
Yeah,
they're everywhere. Like it's a pretty common phenomenon. Like I'm sure every town, you know.
I know we've talked about Vine a little bit, but there's just one clip of Hoarders with this old lady. Have you guys seen this? It's just this old lady, and she's like sitting in her chair, and she's literally like just engulf like piles of shit, just like trash and paper and everything.
Right now.
And it's funny because the doctor comes in and she's like, "Oh my god!" And then this old lady's like, "Hello!" Like just like in the middle of nothing. I'll pull it up later.
All these sounds really adorable though. At the same time,
yeah, it was.
I'm hoping they're all stuffed animals.
Yeah,
like, yeah, really clean stuffed animals.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so you do the hoarders thing, and that had to have like maybe I don't know if encourage is the right word, but you were kind of like, oh shit, I like this. You know,
I like hoarders.
It was interesting. I mean, for me, I always love. So I've always been obsessed with like the secret lives of people. Is what I pretty much say.
Yeah.
So like, I always love observing
abnormal behavior.
Or I mean, it's hard to even say abnormal. Just like I almost think it's really normal. It's just no one talks about it.
You know?
Like
sure.
The weird things that people collect or do in their homes when no one's looking. Or
yeah.
You know, I think we just hold on to so many secrets, you know, like we're so scared of everything. We're told to like, you know, be, you know, certain ways and to blend in and
maintain the status quo.
Yeah. And
image or whatever.
Yeah. And it's just interesting how, you know, I mean, within that situation of the show, it's, you know, you see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You either feel bad for the person or you don't understand, you can't relate, or you make fun of.
You're
you know,
utterly like, you know, repulsed.
Yeah. You know, but it's like, it's weird because like being able to talk to the guy, you know, it was a sad story and he knew it, but he wanted to hold on to it.
Sure.
And he didn't want to, you know, but there's other people, like some of the people that were volunteering. I remember this one woman.
Volunteering?
Yeah. People were volunteering to help clean up and everything.
What? To be on TV?
Yeah. Well, this one woman kept trying to plug her book.
Oh,
and
Jesus.
She's like, I clean, you know, houses. I'm a therapist. And she just kept, you know, wanting to be on the show, kept positioning herself to kind of be on camera and everything. And you know, honestly, it is a show, but they are, you know, for the most part, at least with the other doctor, they really are trying to help, you know,
right.
For the most part. And originally I thought it was awesome. Cause I was like, wow, there's all these people there to like help this person, you know? And it ended up just being her, you know, kind of trying to plug her book and stuff. And she ended up leaving, I think, like half the day she was there.
She's not used to getting her hands covered in cat shit.
Well, she got mad at me, too, because I was talking to her. She was like, well, it's just, you know, I came here and I'm spending all my time and I haven't, you know, they're not even filming any of us and everything. That's what I told her. I go, well, I thought you were like a doctor. Like, so you probably, you know, I was like, do you like film all of your like therapy sessions to like have on TV? Like it's just weird, you know. I was like, I thought you were here to help, you know. Mm-hmm. And she,
you kind of came, had a little come to Jesus talk with her. Yeah. And she was like, oh, fuck it, I'm going home.
I feel like I get into weird conversations with people anywhere I go. Not weird, but you know, maybe a little more in depth than normal.
Sure.
I think I've always just been a curious person. I don't know.
Yeah,
not much.
What other, if you were, okay, let's just Let's step out.
I want to say something. On the
go ahead.
On the curious thing, and I can edit this out if you want me to, Josh.
But shit. Here we go.
Brandon knows too much.
I used to live in an apartment in the Old Market, and this is how I met Josh, which I would like to hear his perspective of how we met, because it kind of blurred of, like, just met a lot of people that Ryan knew back then. But I remember you and Ryan had never drank alcohol before.
Oh, my God.
And I'll edit this out if we need to. They go down to Cubby's and buy, like, not a handle.
I'm surprised you, like, remember.
Like a little, like a bottle of vodka, but enough. Okay. Enough.
right.
And they come back, and him and Josh, nothing mixed in it, just straight vodka. Just
drink it. I thought that's what you're supposed to do. Yeah.
And then about an hour later, him and Ryan were in the bathroom just puking for like hours.
Yeah.
How old were you?
I don't even remember how old. How old was I?
I mean, I had just turned 21, and I think you guys were slightly younger than me, maybe around the same age.
You did have a strict Asian father. Yes. Nobody was drinking in pickup trucks and chained doors.
No, nothing. I was very Christian background. Yeah, yeah. Couldn't listen to anything but Christian music. You know.
How old are you?
Yeah, I'm 34.
So we're the same age. So you must have been 21 because you were able to buy it.
Well, that was one of the first times I ever drank.
Yeah.
Ever.
I
think that may have been the first time I ever drank.
Yeah.
Because
this is
stupid. I'm going to say this just so, like... Because it's bad, but I did drive home with Ryan during a blizzard after we drank Skol Vodka at your apartment. Ooh, so, but there was no one in the road, so that's how we thought we would justify it. And we spun cookies in front of Cubby's. We were just driving around. So you could edit that out if you want to.
No, I think it's a great story. I have one more from that apartment, and then we'll leave it, put it to rest. But... I don't remember how it happened, but I remember you and Ryan somehow had spilled laundry detergent all over the carpet, like half a bottle of like Tide.
Wait,
and
what? It's
blue, and it was stained the carpet. There's this huge pile of.
How does that happen?
I don't remember that. I remember like weird things. Like I remember you had like a bucket of pennies by your window, or like it was a big coffee can.
That must have been Chauncey's. That's not something I would have.
It was on your side. It wasn't on your side of the.
I don't know.
Anyway,
weird. I don't know.
So people used to pee in the alley all the time. By your house, so we'd always throw
pennies
on them. Yeah, I feel like you taught me that though.
Probably.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's a great game.
Yeah, good times.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, we could. I mean, Josh and I could reminisce about so much
shit. That's good shit.
That apartment was like seriously like
bedlam.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Just a bunch of guys trying to figure out what they're going to do with their
lives. We all wore pea coats.
Yeah,
we had pea coats.
Pea coats were big.
Yeah.
Really, we had some cool hair.
Yeah,
a lot of pea coats. So, all right, let me ask you this, Josh.
Yes.
If you were right now, and we should probably all answer this question, but if you were right now to design your own show based on behind-the-scenes behavior of some average folks, what would you do?
Wow.
Because I feel like I have a couple.
That's all shit. Well, you've thought about this. This is a...
Definitely thought about it.
So if I had like kind of like a reality show based off of like...
Yeah.
People?
So like, you know, in the realm of hoarders or freaky eaters or whatever. Just like, just really, you know, like...
Honestly, I always thought it would be a really great idea, no matter who was president, if everything was filmed in live stream.
Whoa.
And I always thought, when Donald Trump was elected that's what would eventually happen.
There.
So, I mean, that's always interesting.
What if it was like true royalty, like the king of a small
country? Yeah, anything like that would be great, honestly. I don't know. That's a really good question. I'd have to kind of think about that. Actually, I have a really soft spot for people who work in the fast food industry.
Oh, yeah. Ooh,
and I think that I have, like, I've always had weird theories about that industry, even, like, the uniforms people have to wear and everything like that. And because I think, like, everybody tends to just go, like, you know, I grew up, everyone's like, oh, you don't want to flip hamburgers your whole life.
I know.
You know, oh, you don't want to do this. Oh, you don't want to do that. Oh, you know, relating to the fast food industry. And
you're going to be asking, would you like fries with that for the rest of your life unless you get a B+ on this fucking algebra test?
Right, yeah. But there's, like, people that work really hard. Yeah. There's people that work really hard in that industry. And, you know, like, my dad, you know, was in the Philippines. and came over. Like, our family over there was pretty pretty well off, you know, doing very well. And dad had a bunch of businesses, a bunch of stuff over there. When he came over here, we kind of, you know, left and had to kind of almost start over, you know. And his English wasn't that great.
When did he get here, year-wise?
So I was about 7 years old.
Oh, you were born in the Philippines?
Yeah, I was born in the Philippines. I didn't speak English when I came here, actually. Shit. Yeah, cool. Yeah. So when I came here, Shenandoah, Iowa's newspaper put us on the front page as, like, the Oriental kids that have moved.
Oh, my God. Did they use that word?
I think that was used at a point, yeah. I didn't know back then. We were excited because we were, like, on the in the newspaper. Yeah, I remember them saying, like, my sister looked like a China doll, you know?
Jesus so, Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, also, we have a multi-million dollar, like, company in town called Oriental Trading Company.
Yeah. Dude. Jesus. So, okay. All right. You said you were, like, 7. So, this is, like, 1990s, 91,
yeah,
92.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Way too late in the game to be talking like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like, it's weird because, like...
But it came from a good place, obviously. There
yeah, talking, you know. Yeah. My dad came over here as a foreign exchange student before, anyway. That's how I met my mom. And so he was the first, I think, to marry outside of our, like, the Chinese bloodline. So he's... My dad was, like, the first badass, I think, of the family.
Rebel, yeah.
He definitely was a rebel. And so, like, you know, the first place I think he worked at was... Remember when Imperial Palace was on, like, 114th and whatever? Because my dad's degree was in, like, business and restaurant management.
Cool.
And I think he worked there just, like, that was one of the places I would hire him. And right. So he was, like, a manager, I think, for a bit and everything. And it was hard. Like, our family was not rich, you know, here. And then eventually he knew someone that worked at Burger King, and he ended up getting, like, some kind of, like, manager, district manager, something job there. And I remember, like, growing up in high school, everybody was always, like, saying the same thing. You don't want to flip burgers your whole life. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do this. You don't want to do that. And I remember being so ashamed, like, being like, oh, like, my dad, like, works in the fast food industry. So people would always ask, what do your parents do? And I'd always avoid the question. You know, I always avoided it. I was just like, you know, I mean, even till, like, you know, just a couple of years ago, you know, and it was just something like I didn't know how to go about it or telling people. But as I started talking to my dad about that industry and started realizing, like, you know, he's being hired to help raise kind of like the profit margins of these companies, and he was doing it, and then he got screwed over again. And I won't obviously get into it, but there's also some things that, you know, laughingly, my dad will say, oh, you know, like the guy that's above him said this very racist thing about some of the employees there and about my dad.
Yeah.
And he kind of laughed. And I told my dad, I said, that's not cool. You know, he's like, well, you know, I mean, what am I going to do? Like, no one else will hire me, you know, whatever. And I'm sitting there looking at my dad. He owned, like, nightclubs, hotels, restaurants, like tons of stuff, you know, and then seeing him come here and be treated that way just because of that industry, and then people telling him, you know, like treating him a certain way, and then knowing his past is so interesting to me. So about the show, I think it'd be interesting to hear those voices of people that we just often kind of order things and order them around and actually hear what they have to say.
Yeah.
And I'm really grateful that my dad, there's a, it's a really long story, but there's a lot of things I think him working that profession helped humble him, I think, and, really helped him kind of become more of a real kind of real person here on earth. Like, cause him and I didn't have probably the best relationship growing up. I think we didn't really understand the way we thought, you know? And, you know, I started learning these things about my father, how he, like, wanted to be a photographer, you know, like, we had all these photos that were beautiful in our house, had no idea he took them.
Wow.
I thought they're things my parents bought. And so it's just a really interesting dynamic. So if I were to have a show, that long whole history behind it,
yeah,
it would be to hear, like, people like that, or even immigrants that have come here. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, don't realize, like, I always identified more as, like, a white American, even though I was never really treated that. It was always Josh is Chinese or whatever. And I started thinking about it, and I was like, man, like, I always thought I just kind of, like, blended in with everything. And then when I look back, I start thinking about, oh, you know, it is a little tough sometimes, you know, but it pushes you, you know, to get...
It's an incredibly tough time to do anything, especially immigrate to a new country at 7 years old.
Yeah.
Where, like, you learned how to write your name, you know,
yeah, yeah.
10 minutes ago, and now you're traveling across the world to the middle of America in Shenandoah. I mean, you like when you went to America, you went to America.
Yeah, yeah.
Bam.
Yeah. It was nice.
That's
though.
Really interesting, man.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool. Like, I mean, I actually came here when I was like 3 years old. So like, there's a bunch of stuff happening in the Philippines. So my mom and I, you know, came over here. My sister was already here, and we slowly all kind of came through. Okay. But yeah, you know, it's, sometimes I forget about all of that. I forget how I got here. I forget how I became, you know, I forgot that I didn't speak English. I forgot, you know, all these things. So
yeah, let me ask you about that, man. Like, what? So where did English come in? I mean, obviously, like, you had to learn it in Shenandoah, Iowa.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
But
that seems like a fucked up phrase.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, I don't think that there was a thriving Filipino community in Shenandoah, Iowa in 1992 or whatever. Like, to integrate or whatever. So, I mean, do you recall much of that? Like, the language?
I don't. I honestly, I remember people's faces and the way they kind of looked. But everyone was so friendly. Like I said, I mean, kind of the way everything is right now at the moment, you know, a lot of people have kind of watched what they say. And I mean, they're like, I kind of grew up with, like, even though it probably wasn't cool.
Yeah.
I didn't really think about it, 'cause I was in their kind of like culture, you know? So I kind of grew up with, I was the only Asian kid at school. So it's not like I had another Asian dude that was like, that's not really that cool. You know, like all Asians all don't know karate, you know, but even though I did, like, you know, it's like all these weird things. But, I kind of like, I'm happy. Like, everything that's happened in life, good and bad, I wouldn't have had it any other way, basically. But there was a lot of support there too. You know, a lot of it was like church, you know, church related. But even in that, I really had a really good kind of like foundation built, you know, with, cause I was mainly with my mom's side of the family. My mom's, you know, white or whatever. And so, they were like super cool. Like, while my dad was gone, you know, so it was a nice trade off, like, altogether. I think,
yeah,
like,
you did have a solid foundation. You had support systems.
So yeah. It was just kind of like, awesome. But I will admit, like, today, I think, like, with photography, with video, with everything, I really, like, I was talking to my brother about it too. I often don't know where I belong, like, a lot of times, and I think that it's good. I think that's why most of the time in situations I kind of observe, you know, like, I don't have to really take part in anything. I just like to watch, but
I actively engage without tagging along.
To just kind of see, because I don't feel like I have, it's weird. Like, I was born in the Philippines, but by blood, I'm not Filipino. Like, I'm Chinese and predominantly Irish.
Okay.
But I grew up in basically a white town, so I never really knew what that even meant.
Just a big old mutt like the rest of us.
Yeah, you know, the closest thing to Chinese people were, you know, was this Chinese restaurant in Shenandoah that served Americanized Chinese food. And so, you know, and that played a huge role later on in my life, like doing food photography and stuff, because, like, food is really the only thing that connects me to my family.
Okay.
That's the only thing that I can smell something and I know where I'm at in the Philippines. Like, I can... Wow. I often was craving this flavor that I've never tasted, or I thought I had never tasted before. And about 5 years ago, I went to the Philippines and found this fruit called Chico.
Okay.
And I ate it, and finally I was like, oh my God, that is what I've been, like, smelling and tasting that I didn't think even existed, you know? Mm-hmm. But when I went over there, I was like, oh, cool. So
that's super interesting, because taste is so closely related to memory.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about comfort food.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
That was amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
What kind of fruit was it?
It's called Chico. At least that's what they call it there. It's kind of like this brown fruit.
Okay.
And it's a really weird kind of fruit. Okay. It's hard to explain, but very unique.
Yeah, we've actually talked about Philippine cuisine on the show before. I can't remember which episode. My sister-in-law grew up in the Philippines and Saudi Arabia.
Cool.
So we've kind of talked about that stuff before, but. And we can move on after this, but I have to know the name of this dish. It's a fermented egg.
Oh, okay, yeah. Balut?
Balut.
Yeah.
Okay, can you explain that?
Balut is basically, I think they actually boil it. Okay. They might have some that are fermented, but that's more of like almost like a century egg, which is like kind of more of a gelatinous Chinese.
That's what I've heard about.
Oh, okay,
like,
cool.
It's like halfway.
Well, no, you're talking, it's the hard-boiled egg with the
the duck chicken. Fetus. Duck or, yeah. So that's balut, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, like you open it up and there's like kind of a weird broth from boiling it in the egg.
Right, right. It's got to be delicious.
Well, you know, that's the thing is, like, I see it on TV all the time. People make a big deal out of it. But I'm like, this has been eaten for centuries. Right. You know, like, and my cousin Chelsea, she was in Thailand at the time. She came to visit in the Philippines when we were there.
Okay.
And she ate it, and she was just like, ate it like it was nothing, you know? And I'm sitting there like, oh, this is so weird, you know, even though I ate it when I was younger.
Yeah.
And I asked her, I was like, what's it taste like? She goes, it tastes like a roast duck and a hard-boiled egg.
See, that's perfect.
That's what I was going to say.
I mean, if you get past the texture. I feel like a lot of Americans have a textural thing. Like, they don't like tofu.
I don't want
crunchy
eggs.
Yeah.
I don't want... I'll eat eggs all day if they've been unfertilized.
Well, I just laugh because I'm like, you're eating like, it's weird that you're eating like this baby chicken, but you're also like chewing on a chicken leg when you're eating like a chicken leg.
I'm really interested. I think it just sounds super
good. I could probably get you some.
Separate?
But yeah. Like they have it at the Asian market sometimes.
Get the fuck
yeah,
out of
yeah.
Here. Oh my God.
Sweet. I'd be careful like where, I'd ask like, how long has this been here?
Sure.
But,
yeah.
Right.
All right. So anyway, so
I think that's a perfect segment to talk about unfortunate situation. But Anthony Bourdain, because he is a man that taught us a lot about accepting people for who they are and opening my mind to the culinary world and trying different things and not really questioning like the weirdness, quote unquote, like what people, or turned off by.
So we should probably all take a quick second, and I wasn't sure how we were going to approach this because it is such a bummer.
But it seriously, that led into it perfectly, though.
It does.
I mean, he really opened up a lot of people's eyes.
That's true. Life.
So, Brandon, why don't you tell a Bourdain story, and then Josh, and I'll cobble mine together.
Go ahead. I mean, I was talking about it upstairs briefly before we started, but... I just remember, I don't know, like growing up in the Midwest, meat and potatoes, like just eating, that's really all I remember as far as flavors, pizza, Chinese food from the mall, that type of shit.
Yeah.
Growing up in Hastings and Grand Island, there wasn't anything really pushing the limits as far as flavors or food. It was just kind of your basic Midwestern fucking,
Nothing challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember moving to Omaha and watching the Food Network and watching the History Channel and watching No Reservations. And shortly after that, got a copy of Kitchen Confidential and stuff, just learning about him and like his thought, like his storytelling and the way he describes things. You are like there, he's, it was just amazing for me. Like it like opened up my mind. And so until I moved to Seattle, that really was like, everything they have Indian food, like Vietnamese for the first time, like dim sum,
the fish.
Like
it,
like everything, fish. The seafood, everything. It really opened up to my like, there is a whole world out there, and that's just in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, there's a whole another world out. Thai food, all these types of things were getting introduced to me for the first time in my mid-20s, and it it's just so crazy. And then, so like, watching all his shows and reading his book and just getting him. Better appreciation and understanding of food. Like, I mean, I'll be forever grateful because it really like changed my life.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to be, call myself a foodie or whatever.
I don't think you have to. I mean, I think that's kind of a goofy thing anyway, just being adventurous with how,
like, but you're saying the texture thing too. I mean, like bringing, that sounds weird or looks weird.
Yeah.
Have you ever ate like, duck? Have you ever, or chicken? Mm-hmm. Have you ever had a boiled egg? It's the same thing. It just, it's just like being more accepting to other people's cultures and where they came from and what their history of that country like.
And not being a little bitch.
Yeah.
Try it.
Yeah.
Don't be a little whiny bitch about it. I'm sorry, it's not a chicken McNugget.
Right.
Eat the fucking egg.
I think it kind of it kind of goes to like, the way people approach food to me, especially like if it's not from your culture, or like how you grew up is really similar to how people just kind of are. I mean, even today, like people are scared of each other, they don't want to like, even when it's like, oh, well, you can do whatever you're doing. I just don't want to, whatever.
Well,
it's like,
weird.
It's like, okay, you're almost there, but you don't want to jump. It's the same thing with like taking that bite, And with Anthony Bourdain, one of the things that I remember from what he said was, like, you know, one of the best things that came out of war was food. Like, sure. He talks about the banh mi or, mm-hmm. you know, like, these different things. And that's French something like...
colonialism in
yeah.
Vietnam.
Yeah.
That's where fuck came from. I mean, Jesus Christ, and banh mi.
Anyway, like, everything, sorry. Yeah, I'm everything kind of goes together. Like, you have, like, noodles that originated, you know, in China. Like, you know.
Get
and
out
so
of here.
People are like, the Italian.
Like,
I was like, yeah.
I'm sorry if I offended
it's
any
a Chinese.
With my horrible Italian. Missy just provided some beverages.
She's
and
shout out.
In here with
I
her.
Got the Copper Thank Alt so Zipline.
Best wife
Thank
ever.
You. Bing.
But keep going.
Yeah, so I guess, like, for me, I was super, like, bummed out. Ray woke me up at, like, 7 in the morning, and I don't wake up really easily,
Jesus
especially
Christ,
early.
Yeah.
Ray just goes, he goes, there's some really bad news. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, I'm just going to tell you because you're going to find out. He's like, Anthony Bourdain died. And I was like, yeah, I didn't say anything. I go, okay. And then I was like, and then I woke up, I was like, wait, what did you just say?
Yeah.
And it just sucks. You know, I think it's even how he died is what sucked.
The biggest bummer about it, you know?
It's just a surprise. And then, like, his friend Eric Repair, who I love Eric Repair, too. I've never met him.
Yeah.
Like, found him. Like, that just sucks. But I think, you know, he contributed so much. But at the same time, I don't, you know.
Could we not say that he might be the... I feel like he is really, like, the big reason of why things are the way they are today in the colonial world. I don't
want
to pinpoint it just to one person because it's a lot of other things.
He's a definite pillar of the zeitgeist that is happening with, like, food and
but even the fucking food shows, the travel shit.
Absolutely.
It all spawned from Kitchen Confidential. Like, it all...
His writing.
It's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
The dude changed the world.
So the first time... I knew who this guy was. I was young, working at a French bistro here in town, and my boss, a cool chick, super, super cool chick, she was like, hey, you should check out this book. I was just waiting tables and bartending, but super interested in food, interested in wine, like just wanted to learn everything and eat everything. I've never been a picky eater. Love it all. I love it all. Mm-hmm. But she was like, you should check out this book. It's called The Last Supper. And this book is a great book. I recommend it to anybody. It's just kind of a fun little read. But it's all these world-class chefs or chef personality types that list their what they would have for their last meal. Mm-hmm. And then there's a brief bio. And they ask them questions like, what's your favorite band? And other shit like that. Okay. And I get to Bourdain's page. And he is completely naked. With a giant, what I believe is like a cow femur bone in front of his package.
I've seen that
and
picture.
And I was like, I love this motherfucker already. Because everything else is like stiff
yeah,
and shit.
Yeah.
You know, and I turn the page and I'm like, all right. And his favorite band, I'll never forget this man. His favorite band was Brian Jonestown Massacre, which is one of my top three or whatever, you know, one of my favorite bands. And his last meal, I can't remember exactly, but it involved bone marrow. And that was like the most original and interesting thing I had read in that book. And I was like, I like this guy. And that's when my boss was like, oh, well, you should read his book. She had a huge crush on him. Of course. Fuck, I had a crush on him.
I think the whole world did.
How could you not? Yeah. That man was pure sex. But anyway, so... that was when I read Kitchen Confidential.
Yeah.
And being young and working with like chefs... And, like, living that restaurant life, and it really... Mm-hmm. I did not feel like the lowly waiter that was doing this in transitioning into doing something else. I was like, no, this is what I do, and I fucking love it, and I take it very seriously.
Yeah.
And I am prideful about it, and that book really provided...
It's such a big fucking thing, too. Like, so many people, like, go out to eat, or, like, the... You know, it's
Omaha
just...
Talks guest Dave Butterback posted the other day that Kitchen Confidential was the reason why...
Yeah,
he went into kept going being in the chef.
Yeah.
Like, get the fuck out of here! How many people have that same story?
Mm-hmm.
You know. So we owe a lot to Bourdain. I know everybody's seen a lot and heard a lot, and we don't want to rehash anything bad, but because it does suck.
Mm-hmm.
But hats off.
I think a lot of good came from him. He found out, you know, like with David Chang or like Danny Bowen from Mission Chinese and like, sure, you know, all these places, like now I'm in love with all these people too, right, you know? Right. And obviously it's like, I don't know any of them personally. I don't know, like, but, it's almost more powerful, like, not knowing, you know, like, yeah. I would definitely remember him for all the great things, you know, that he's done and everything. So yeah, I don't know. I get bummed if I talk about it. So
I'm gonna... Yeah, I didn't mean to bring that. But I think it's important. We gotta talk. Yeah.
His new cookbook, though, was sweet, too. The photography in that, it was another reason why I bought it. It's and beautiful. I feel like it was just Deadman perfect.
Yeah, got it out. I was like, I'm going to cook something out of this cookbook in honor. And I was looking at it.
Yep.
And my wife is not as adventurous with food as I am.
Mm-hmm.
And she tries.
Yeah.
Doesn't pan out. And I'm looking at all this stuff, and I'm like, everything that I want to cook in here will make, it will repulse you. You know what I mean? Like, there was a quesadilla with, like, duck in it. I was like, I don't know where I'm going to find duck today, but it's got to happen. But
a lot of times you just don't tell people and you give it to them, then they're like, cool.
See, you know, I've tried that so
much. I hope Missy does not hear this, but I want to do that to her, where I'm like, oh, it's al pastor.
Yeah.
That was tongue. Boom, you loved it.
Yeah.
That's the type of thing is I know she would love that stuff, but it's the thought of it or whatever.
Dude,
I have fed
my wife goat cheese in every representation possible. Blended goat cheese, cow's milk, sheep's milk. She detects it every time.
Oh, yeah.
Instant dry heat. She's like, I can't. Really? Just can't do it.
Brandon likes ketchup.
I fucking hate ketchup. Yeah, I fucking hate ketchup. Have we ever had this conversation?
No, but pre-chunks, I fucking hate ketchup.
That's one of my favorite memories of you, actually.
Gross.
And I'll have another like side story on that, though. But the smell of it repulses me.
I'm right there with you,
fucking
man.
Cannot stand it. It's the worst thing. I don't know if you've ever watched the movie Jackass, but they like put mustard. The guy hates mustard.
No, I've never seen that before. Yes!
But there's, well, no, there's a part with the mustard
part.
Yeah. That's me with ketchup. Dude, like, I will fucking like break
gag,
your,
yeah.
I will like break your car window.
Dude, when I was in eighth grade at my lunch table, we had a kid that would just eat anything. We'd be like, we're gonna mix this up, blah, blah, blah. And he'd be like, I'll fucking eat it, whatever.
Yeah.
The day that Parker threw up, it was ketchup and raisins.
And he ate
a cup of it.
Jesus.
That sounds terrible.
It
might be good, though. We don't know.
Oh, no.
So I might have to try it.
No. Yeah,
ketchup and raisins. That would be like the new extra food. You'd be like, oh, we have avocado toast and ketchup raisins.
This is like vividly in my memory, but so hanging out with Josh back in the day, our friend
toast.
Ryan was in this band, Bart of the Trigger.
Mm-hmm.
They played in Grand Island. We actually drove to Grand Island. Mm-hmm.
I saw Bart of
the Trigger at the bowling alley. But I was dating this girl, Lindsay, at the time. And we stopped to get some food. And she had a cheeseburger with ketchup on it. And she knew I fucking hated it. And she opened it up and put it in my face. Mm-hmm. Instant reaction. I couldn't even think. I just went, whack! And I just slapped it, and it went all over the car. And like,
I just remember you kept going,
but like hamburger bun stuck to the window type of thing. Like,
oh,
like,
my God.
That's how it just, it's just, yeah, it's just like an instant.
And when I was a kid, and I was like 16 or whatever, and I worked at Valentino's in Grand Island, and they had like a bacon cheeseburger pizza that I would have to make. You know how you make that shit? You take a giant gallon jug
of
ketchup.
Oh, my God.
And you mix it with a gallon jug of mustard and a half gallon jug of mayonnaise. And just scraping it out.
I love mayonnaise.
I would put my nose.
I love mayonnaise. Mayonnaise,
I would put my nose.
I love mustard, too.
Oh, mustard.
Mustard and mayonnaise. I'll fuck with those mustard all day. But
I'm going to somehow get you ketchup. Like, you're gonna
actually, I will say this. Once alcohol got introduced to my system, fucking, you get me drunk enough, I'll eat a burger with ketchup on it. But it takes a lot. I was in Seattle.
Boy, Brandon, he's crazy, man. You getting lit up? He'll start eating ketchup burgers like crazy.
Well, no. So in Seattle, there's this place called Dick's. And it's comparative to like Broncos. It's like a little dry, you know, 1950s style. But they will not substitute, like, you get it the way it is, and it has ketchup on it, and yeah, I got like near blackout wasted and needed something to soak it up, and I'm like, it's all right. I'll deal with it. But
I'm proud of you, Brandon.
But I think it's because there's, you know, my taste buds are on a different level at that point.
Oh.
You know, I've really fully substituted sriracha in my ketchup.
Is that how you pronounce, how do you pronounce it?
I say sriracha. What do you say, Josh?
Oh, God. I say sriracha.
That's what everybody says.
I say sriracha, but I...
There's an R right after like, that S.
Sriracha, yeah.
I mean, you sound goofy.
I don't think I've ever even looked at how it's spelled. Right, I think I just said it and put it on everything.
We know what you're talking about. Yeah. Okay, Josh, Jesus, we are just out of control here. So pictures.
Photography.
All right, so yes. You start taking pictures of food.
Mm-hmm.
Who are some of your clients that Omaha Talkers would know about? Like, because I guarantee you they've seen your
one. Well... I have
everybody
I've had the privilege to shoot quite a few restaurants in town. Like one fun one was Sternella when they opened in nice. Blackstone. Yeah. I kind of just hung out for a week.
Cool.
And kind of just photographed like I think like the start of a restaurant's really interesting. Mm-hmm. And you know, working in kitchens, it's fun because like sometimes I'm not saying this it happened at this place, but. Like, whenever you're in a kitchen, sometimes you can tell, like, people want to communicate maybe a little louder. Like, yeah. But if you're there as a photographer, like, you can kind of see it about to happen. They're like, do you think you just put that over there, please?
Right, so, right.
But I love it when I can go to a restaurant, kind of sit in the kitchen and take photos, and they're just exactly how service is. But,
it's dance, man.
Yeah, like, Akurant obviously is excellent, like in Benson. And then I hung out with Dave Utterback as he was kind of like, he had dry-aged hamachi.
Oh,
and we just kind of chatted and we're taking photos and just for fun, you know. But, yeah.
This food is so good, man.
Yeah. Omaha-wise, there's quite a few, I guess. Yeah.
But you've done, like, Qdoba too. You've done some like national stuff too.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to do that.
Nest Tea, right? Or something?
Lipton, yeah. Lipton. Did one for Lipton.
You know which what is crazy. I miss from Lipton? The fucking the claymation Bruce Lee James
Brown. Oh, I forgot baby. About that. Yeah.
That was such a strange.
Dang, I should have brought that. I should have brought that up. Like, yeah. That would have been cool.
And Bruce Lee was like, no!
I love dude. Yeah, Bruce Lee is the man.
Photograph.
Dude,
I was thinking man. About bringing back that claymation Bruce Lee. Do you guys have that in a stock room?
You know? Nobody that in that boardroom would know what the fuck you were talking about, but one guy would be like, hell yeah, those are dope. You know?
It was a pretty yeah. That was a fun. That was a super fun shoot and like. Yeah, and then I did one for Pepper Jacks recently. I have kind of like a partnership with Bolt House Farms. They also run 1915 Organic, and okay. It's like a juice company.
So when you do outfits like Pepper Jacks or Qdoba, like, do you shoot here in town?
Yeah, lately I have. The Lipton one was in New York, so I went out there for that. And then, like, yeah, actually recently it's just all been kind of here, which is nice.
That's cool.
I think Omaha is, you know, work-wise, I think they're really kind of people are starting to become really interested in this area, mm-hmm. at least from what I've noticed. But food-wise, Omaha, like being in, you know, with ConAgra, like a lot of people do the testing here.
Sure.
And so I feel like that's how a lot of times like agencies come to me because it's like, oh, well, we're already here.
It's convenient.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you have a resume, so it's not like
yeah,
it's, taking a chance on this
yeah
Nebraska kid, you know.
I think it's also great because with food photography, you know, in the 90s or you know, you think of like fast food stuff, it's like plastic or it's like
mm-hmm. yeah,
model, you know, the fact that he takes like stuff that literally just came out of the kitchen.
Oh, you don't spray hairspray on it?
I mean, it depends, but typically now everyone's kind of the food styles that I work with, or if I have to do it myself, it's all real food.
Yeah.
So, but there are little tricks. I'm not gonna lie, sure. like ice cubes, or like, you know, I always use fake ice cubes because if the shoot goes, you know, long, you right? Know, but
that's just practical.
Yeah.
But I mean, there are shoots, you know, where, like my buddy, it wasn't my client, but I had a friend that was doing a Taco John's thing, and they like lacquered all of the tater tots. And I walked in and just smelled just like that
heavy lacquer. Like it was a fucking
he was like,
shot.
Don't eat these. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But I think like Omaha's food is just like whenever I do shoot out of the state, you know, like a lot, I get that question. They're like, where are you from? I'm like, Omaha. And they're like,
You know Conor Oberst?
Where? Yeah. No, dude, it's always Omaha Steaks. Yeah. It's like, and that's the thing, when I was like, you know, the thing in New York with the Lipton thing was just like, kind of just like a random happening. And so.
Was it Bobby Flay or something? Wasn't there someone? Yeah.
Yeah. It was him, which was weird because it was like, I always watched Iron Chef and like, you know, and he's like big on Food Network. And, but I found out like 2 days beforehand that I was going to go shoot for that. So they're like, hey, what are you doing Thursday and Friday? And I'm like, actually, I'm not booked that day. And they're like, you want to come out here? So I went and did that. It was terrifying. It like felt like it wasn't real. It was like a 14-hour shoot. And
but did you just walk in there like you were the baddest motherfucker?
I was an idiot, actually. I wore a full polka dot suit. Oh, wow. And they're also filming. And so you typically you want to wear like black.
Oh, there's Josh.
And I just couldn't help it. I was like, I have to wear this outfit today. And so I did. And the whole time, like, one of the producers came up and he was like, maybe next time you should wear like the darker color. And I was like, okay. Like, and I knew that going into it. I just don't know what happened. Like,
you
I was
know
just
what
like,
though? Everybody remembered the photographer.
I did get some really good friends. There you go. Yeah. I met the food styles, like one of the food styles. Worked with Food Network, was there, and
cool.
Super talented. But yeah, I'm excited for Omaha and food. I mean,
man.
I love, really, even if I didn't do it for like a job, like I would probably still be taking pictures of food everywhere, because it's like, it's a way for me to kind of document, you know, a lot of menus are seasonal too. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of like the weird thing. I'm like, I'm never going to see this again. Like I have to take a picture, you know? And, but the chefs here work so hard, man. Like, and a lot of it, I feel like.
Do you think they have to prove more because of the Midwest? Do you think it's like, I don't
I
know,
think
because.
They have to, I think they have to try harder. Yeah. In a food town.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only so many people in Omaha. We have a wide range of selection. You know?
It just seems like, and we've talked about, we always talk about food on this podcast.
I can't help it. Yeah. I love it, man. That's like my favorite thing.
It's insane. But it feels like just in the last like decade that so much has changed. And there's been, I mean, we got our first juice shop like a week ago. I mean, you know, it's still like, we're still getting newer things, but there's also a lot of culture here. There's a lot of hidden gems, a lot of stuff that's been there for 10 years that we didn't even know about. Like, it's just weird. It's all kind of coming to the surface. And
like, I think when we talk about like Anthony Bourdain and like even like the shows like Top Chef or whatever, like it's kind of helped that industry become like
absolutely
kind of like you know, elevate these people that work really hard. I mean, their hours aren't like little hours, you know, and there's chefs like there's my friend Kane Atkinson is a really, really talented chef, and he's like a very humble, cool guy. But like the first time I photographed them, there's three brothers that are all in the industry, and it's just so fascinating to me. I always tell them, like I'm always fascinated by you three because you're like brothers. You all do the same thing. You get along so well, you know. And but yeah, I think there's just so many good people. Like, yeah, I could go on about all the chefs in town.
Yeah,
but there's also really sweet like mom and pop restaurants that
absolutely
like places like Dandelion Pop-Up. I think do a really good job of like kind of bringing in people who might not be known as much, at least in this area, and like giving them kind of a voice to like do these pop-ups, you know. So
dude, I think honestly, and they just opened a new spot on whatever 73rd and Pacific, but Song Wing Thai, like talk about a family restaurant. That family, they were not restaurateurs, amazing cooks.
Yeah,
I mean,
and people were like, you
it's good for
yeah. But that thing specifically, I think that's like the thing. It's been there, it's been here for a while, but we weren't searching for it for you know, 5 or 10 years, and it Thai places, there's maybe hundreds, I don't know, hundreds, there's tons, there's just so many varieties of it, and it's just like, you know, like Ethiopian food, like Thai food, Indian food.
There's like a new Burmese place too.
Yeah,
I know.
Is that
on Maple? I want to try that.
Is that what Dave posted the other day?
Yes.
But stuff like that.
You can't stop talking about Dave.
Love him.
I love him. I love you too, Dave.
I want to kiss you.
Dave, your hair is always nice. It's always
and you smell good.
I need to go eat there. It's funny because like right after this, like Modern Love has like vegan mozzarella sticks.
Whoa.
And I had a message on them. I'm like, I do this like podcast thing. Can you guys like at hold some?
Well, you know, we have done podcasts at Oliver's. So
that
would have been awesome. Yeah, that would have been a little more apt.
But I just think that there's just like so much of it out there that's like an untouched, like territory, like even in Omaha, where there's just like so much cool shit, so much good food, so much culture, so much things that like we haven't even really like touched the surface, and it's starting to like bubble up. But like, it's
You have the big ones, you know, like Burmese, like that's tiny, you know, like that's rare. Like I would like to have like a fucking like a Trinidadian restaurant or a like I've never had Cambodian food. I would love to, you know, like, or
you just have to look for it, you know,
even like Eastern European food, you know, like some like Slavic, you know, I mean, the closest thing there were a couple of like Czech restaurants, but it, Bohemian Cafe, get out of here.
It's hard in the Midwest, you know, like there was a Filipino restaurant that opened that was only open for maybe 3 months.
Really?
Yeah. It was called Isla, I think. Okay. And like, I didn't even have a chance to go eat there. Like, I, like, drove to it, and they were closed. And I was like, damn. Like, and, like, there's a lot of food. I think Korean food now is kind of, like, I think because of chefs like David Chang, all these people, like, people are now kind of, like, okay with the funk that's in, like, kimchi. Like,
sure.
You know, and, like, one of my clients before Suji's Korean Grill, and she's amazing. I love her, and she can drink me under the table. She's great. She's food, fantastic.
Man. I've been there a few times.
Yeah, and I think what she's trying to do is like a really good. She's trying to introduce people into it. She's very passionate, and I have a lot of respect for her too, because she also has her own line of sauces, and she's like everywhere, you know. And she works really hard, and I think also like with like the female chefs in the industry or when the women chefs. That are around, I feel like they also get overlooked a lot too. Like,
Three and four.
Oh my god! Right. Yeah, I'm like there every day. Well, I was going
to, and I don't know to go into this area, but terracotta. Do you know? Are you familiar?
Who is that?
Terracotta.
Terracotta. I don't know who that is.
Terracotta is his Instagram personality.
Oh,
that he'll do. Amazing. Missy and I will like sit.
You're a terracotta warrior.
I don't know where it
I don't know if he has any on his phone. We'll do it later. But it's fucking hilarious.
That started in Florida, actually, because Ray and I went on vacation to Treasure Island, which is like the most like, it's like such a touristy place. But it was awesome. But we were down there, and before we went, like, I love to just, like, see what restaurants are there or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we got on YouTube, like, this weird rabbit hole where it was like this dad. But he was, like, all by himself, just doing a tour of, like, Treasure Island.
And he talked like this. And he was just so excited. And his wife was somewhere, but we didn't really think she really existed.
But he was just, like, the way he talked, like, we were laughing so hard. So, I got bored. Treasure Island. But I'm sorry, he's like,
I do declare. This is the best place to get nachos.
And we even went to some of the restaurants that were like there, you know.
There's a video. There's a video that Missy talked about that I didn't see, but you did you were doing terracotta at Whole Foods, and someone's like, "Don't film me," and you're like, you're like, "Don't worry about
it." I get in trouble a lot, actually. Yeah. Like that's a weird ongoing thing that just came to my attention like maybe a couple years ago, and that was like. I tend to do these bizarre, like, alter egos whenever I'm, like not maybe at the best place in my life, which is weird. Yeah. And, like I had an alter ego named Isaac French that I was, like, doing videos as, and, like, I was...
Have you seen this?
No.
Oh, my God. You've got to see it before you leave.
Yeah.
It's,
like, well,
it's
weird. I'm gonna go and watch this shit. I don't like to do research before the shit, you know?
No, that's cool. That's cool.
But I
got
to see this.
Well, it's like something
like... I like that you go there in bad times in your life, like your coping mechanism.
It is, man.
Like a little disassociated.
It really... It kind of saved me in a weird way. Sure. Like, that's before, like, I'd come out and stuff, and, like, Isaac French was this weird artsy person, like, this art dude that, like... was a little flamboyant and just did what it was like. I could put on this outfit and just do whatever I wanted to do. And like, Fashion Week had come up like in Omaha. And so like, we kind of just snuck in and like, you know, I had this outfit and I just looked really stupid. And, but I was like able to just not be me. Yeah. And, cause at that time I just didn't like who I was. So it was kind of like, I just kind of did that. And, oddly enough, like even with terracotta, like, I had a friend of mine tell me like, Josh, like, it's weird you like have this other character, you know, and I was like, yeah, it's just for fun, whatever. But I also realized like one of my best friends had passed away in the beginning of this year, and then suddenly, you know, this like Terry Connor shows up, you know, and like it was just it's weird where like not to like be a bum or anything, but I think that's kind of in an odd way, like growing up making movies like since I was five, like it's I've always just kind of pushed myself into these things where, like, I want everyone to be happy. Mm-hmm. And so I want to try to, like, get people there even if I'm not. You know, it's almost like I want people to feel what I'm not feeling at the time.
Yeah,
so,
well, I mean,
stuff like that ends up happening. But
I think it's definitely a common trait. And I've talked about this before. Like, creative people, we're sensitive to people around us. You know, like, we're sensitive to people's moods. We're sensitive to, like, the emotion that's going on in the situation.
For sure.
And it is heavy to digest sometimes.
It is, yeah.
It's intense, like somebody passing away or whatever.
Yeah.
And grief is an interesting thing because we all process that shit.
He's talking about our mutual friend, Justin, who, rest in peace, was a great guy.
Yeah.
Is this a guy?
Yeah. That.
Oh, like, okay. All right. Person, yeah, man. Yeah. I heard about that, man. Yeah. I'm sorry about that.
No, I mean, it's
tragic.
Life happens, you know, and it sucks sometimes, but... Like, I think with him, like, he was also, like, one of those people that I made videos with, you know, like, where we just be really stupid. We had, like, a kind of, like, a, you know, this weird language that wasn't anything, but we would just, like, say really weird
stuff. I felt like it was the one time where he would be himself, too.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a lot of people are always, you know, have that, like, facade or, you know, are unsure and, like,
just. I live in that place a lot of times.
It allowed it, I mean, just, like, he was... Yeah, I don't know.
You just don't. Yeah, there's no one else. There's just never anybody else like him. And he's always been that way. And like I lived with him. Like, he was who I was living with when I had come out, and I was like terrified to tell anybody. Like,
he was your roommate.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And I mean, like, honestly, I was in a very bad place at that time. Like, yeah. I mean, I was definitely suicidal. I did stupid stuff that I, you know, regret. And like, but he was always just like, it's weird, like, he never really dove into really serious things with you. He kind of like did it in his like this really special way. Okay. Like, where it's just like he would just sit with you, you know. And I remember I was telling everyone, I wrote this whole list, you know, of people I thought would be really hard to tell or people that were really close to me.
Sure.
And so I had just gotten done telling my friend Alex Aparo, and he's a really close friend of Justin's. And we're sitting there, and he's like, oh, man, Justin's going to be coming home soon. And I was like, oh, no. Like, I'm like, we have to plan this out. Like, I'm going to tell him. I'm like, I don't know what to do. And so Justin comes in with, like, a bag of Chinese food. And, like, he's always in athletic shorts, like, barefoot. And he comes and sits down, like, in this chair. And Alex Aparo is, like...
That's seriously him, though. Like, athletic shorts?
Yeah, right? Like, and so Alex is sitting there trying to be, like, my supportive friend, you know?
Sure.
And I didn't know how to tell people, you know? And so Justin's sitting there, just starts eating. And I just go, I'm like, Justin... I have to tell you something. Yeah. And he's just like eating his food. Like, he's like, hey, what, you know? And he goes, I don't know how to say it, but like, I was like, I'm not attracted to women. Or like, and before I even finished that, he just goes, dude, you're gay. I don't care. And then he just ate his food. We didn't talk after that.
Back into his crab
he goes, he's like, and then he stops and he goes, there's a lot you don't know about me. And he just like went in this room, like, which was hilarious. Like, he was just so weird like that. But that stuff like that made me feel like, why am I making this such a, like, why has this held this terrible thing in my life, and it's actually not because a terrible
society
thing.
Society taught you that was the way to feel about it. Hey, real quick, can we just get a little Isaac French?
Oh man, he hasn't been around in a while, so I might have to.
We should do the Terry Cotta.
If any character compels you, if you want to fucking,
Missy's in here filming some behind the scenes.
Oh no!
Yeah.
But we watch the Terry Cotta stuff on a daily basis. It's
So okay, like,
say if Terry Cotta was being on a if he was being interviewed on a podcast.
I think
I'm gonna ask Terry Cotta a question right now.
I think Terry Cotta would just be really excited about this right now. I think he'd have a lot of things to talk about, like his trip to Morocco, maybe, or maybe the new spices that he learned about. He's really into knee-high shorts, the ones that go above the knee recently. He just planted a peach tree in the backyard.
And oh, my God.
Had a fancy latte earlier that he's really excited about.
From Farine and Four.
From Farine and Four, the fanciest place. They put things on toast.
Terry's gone now. He's gone.
That's
good. The avocado toast looks extraordinary.
I love her. So,
can you give us a little behind? Because I haven't been there yet. It's downtown, correct?
I'm sorry, I make some like, avocado toast all the time.
Oh, no, but this avocado but
the way
toast
she
is
does
like,
it that's is just says. Like blessed.
Okay, all right.
It's actually, you know what it really is the bread. Her, okay. Like, the bread is, I can't even explain it. It's just, like, perfect. Like, they have, she makes this focaccia, like,
Okay,
that's so all I can say.
It's like some oral wheat.
No, she actually mills her own wheat.
Oh.
Yeah, she worked at a Michelin star restaurant and stuff.
Jesus Christ.
And she's just amazing. Okay, as a human being, like.
Yeah, that doesn't look like toast. Like,
yeah, it's not your everyday. No. Yeah,
I mean, I've seen it before. I'm not going to name names, and I was just like, "You just paid $12 for
literally
$1.10."
I definitely have spent like it was like $14, I think, for a loaf of bread, and that's before I really like got to know her. And I was like, "I'm going to do this. I'm going to see." I'm like, and I tried it, and I was just like,
"Dude, how good?"
I'm like, "This is how bread's supposed to be.
How good is good bread? I love a fresh baked."
Dude,
you cut into it, some steam comes out.
It's like, I think too, like,
forget about it.
Her personality, like, when you're eating, like, if you get to know her and then you, like, see the things that she's making,
yeah,
it just makes sense. Like, she should be on the show. So, yeah, I think,
oh, absolutely, she should be on the show.
Oh, okay. Dude, yeah. Yes, talking. Yeah, like, and the other, she also makes ice cream, so she made this vegan ice cream for me. It was a Shizo ice cream, actually, she made it for Dave. And I ate it, and I was just like, my mind was blown.
Dave who?
Just kidding. Dave Utterback. He has really nice hair. From Yoshitomo.
That we brought up 20 times.
Dave Utterback. I hope that's left in there, because he's amazing.
All right. I want to have a segment. Hungover food.
Ooh.
When you wake up with that thick fog of a hangover... What do you guys reach for? I'm going to tell you right now, recently, what I've been reaching for is a De Leon's El Pastor burrito.
Ooh.
Now.
Wow.
It's a drive through. I don't have to get out of my car.
Yeah. Missy told me about De Leon's because the one in Lincoln apparently is good. The one here, it was kind of shit, so.
Are you in the Alvalardo's?
I'm an Alvalardo.
Yeah.
I am not.
I've heard it's good.
That's right across from Vis Major, by the way. Have you gone to Vis Major, the brewery?
So good.
They're amazing.
They got Stoicich sausages.
Yeah.
just turned into the Stoicich. Whitest person alive. Stoicich. They got Stoicich sausages. Yeah. So they're fucking great. And their beer was really good, too. And that truffle popcorn was fucking...
But they're also just amazing people.
De Leon's?
Yeah, De Leon's. That's, you know, it's close to my house. Because I think that there are factors that go into a hungover meal. Like, you don't want to, like, you don't want to fuck around. Just put it in my body, please. How do I get this food
like an
in
IV.
Me? Yeah.
Yes.
And so, how dare you, sir, say that De Leon's is shit? Because
I've only had it once.
Their Al Pastor burrito was fantastic. And the last time I got Abelardo's was maybe 10 years ago. And
10 years ago?
I swear to God. Seriously? Wow. I swear to God.
It was like 10 days ago for me.
No, man. Well, at your party.
Yeah. You missed out.
I checked out more than that. But anyway, so that's what I got. Josh, what do you got?
So I always keep rice frozen in my freezer.
Get the fuck out of here.
And so I just microwave it. And then I seriously, this sounds stupid, but the thing I really do eat is braised cabbage, white rice, and I buy like these vegan sausages, and that's it.
Okay.
I used to eat Spam and rice and eggs. That used to be my hangover food. But then once I switched my diet, that's what I eat now.
So you're all vegan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is hard sometimes because, I mean, I don't mind it, but it's hard like when you're shooting food. Like, I did a shoot at V Mertz and they're like, yo, you want to try this food? And I'm like, yeah.
Check
but...
out this pork belly.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. That would be tricky because hangover foods, it's like, I just crave savory. I'm like, I want cholesterol.
I think mine's like pad thai or pho. Those two things.
You want to know what's really good?
Really hit the spot.
This isn't like my go-to, but I have done this before. So I used to have those George Foreman grills, right?
Yeah.
So I love really crappy like Chinese food, like lo mein. And so I used to just take lo mein and put it in a tortilla and fold it up and just grill it. And that's the best. Like a lo mein burrito or day-old crab rangoon is like
day old crab rangoon is.
That's been my shit. Like when I first went vegan, dude. Like, so I have this weird love for Hy-Vee's crab rangoon, and I know that it's not good. Yeah. I know that it's like, you know, it comes in this, the filling comes in this ugly tub, like white tub. I've seen them do it. But after I went vegan, I did sit in the parking lot for a little bit and contemplate, like, I'm like, I think I might just get some. And then I was like, oh, never mind, I won't. But then maybe I did, but didn't tell anyone.
So, okay, how long have you been vegan?
Probably about 2 years. Oh. I'm not, like, super strict about it. But honestly, what happened was, like, I was a vegetarian, obviously, before. Not by choice necessarily because of the allergy, but I was still able to eat fish. So I was a sushi chef for a little bit. And then, after that, like worked at a health food store, started reading about all that. Watched Forks Over Knives, all those documentaries everybody's watching. And I had always wanted.
I remember you working at that, what was the grocery store?
Wild Oats.
Wild Oats.
Yep.
Oh, and, shit, Wild Oats.
And Ryan and I lived in another apartment.
Yep.
Right down the street.
Really close.
And he'd be like, we're going to be throwing some stuff in the dumpster if you guys want to come get it. It'll be fresh.
You're like, absolutely.
I did a lot of terrible things there.
Is this when you lived on, like, 72nd?
It was right behind Liquid Courage, actually. It's not terribly far. It was, like, 75th and Pacific area.
The first place, the first time I ever tried marijuana was because of that.
Heavens,
place.
Heavens, Joshua.
I know. My friend, like, I was so innocent, though. Like, I had no, like, I had a
Wait
friend.
A okay, the first time you drank, you bottle of vodka. What'd you do the first time you smoked pot?
So I had a really good friend of mine named Jody.
Shot it up.
And she worked with me, and she was like, you'd be so funny if you got high. And I was like, I don't do that. That's like, I don't know. You know, it's terrible.
Wild Oats.
It's wild.
It's
so wild.
Wild Oats, baby.
And you know RJ Riley.
Yep.
So he had all these awesome parties at his place. And this was months later. Like, Jody comes up to
me.
From
the vodka
like, thing? Yeah, that was like, I think, well, actually.
Oh, no, months later from her telling you.
From her, telling me. And so she was like, she came to this party with brownies. Because I told her I didn't want to, like, smoke. But I forgot we had this conversation. I was like, why would you ever bring brownies to a party? Like, that's just weird, you know? Yeah. And she comes up to me. She goes, you said you would. And I was like, oh, no. Like, and I didn't know how it worked, right? So, like, I had, like, you know, there's a whole pan of brownies. And they're big, you know, brownies. And so I ate one. And then she, like, you know, probably about 5 minutes, and she goes, do you feel anything? And I go, no, I don't think it's working. She goes, have another one.
Oh.
And I go, okay, so like I ate another
two.
One. I ate three. Yeah.
So you went for it.
Yeah, like, I guess
all over again.
Because I didn't think it was working. So like I ate three of them, and then things got crazy. Like, and then I tried to drive home, and I stopped right in front of the police station on Leavenworth, and just put my car in park and laid down.
Oh, no.
I thought angels were massaging my body,
oh,
and so it felt great.
Goodness.
Anyway, I was high like the next day at Wild Oats, and I remember this woman asking me. She's like, she ordered like half a pound of chicken salad, and I'll never forget it for some reason. And I was like, I remember asking. I was like, wait, what did you want? And she's like, I want half a pound of like chicken salad. And I was like, okay. And I like went to do it, and I was like, Wait, what did you want? I asked her so many times, and everyone was laughing.
And you know that lady. That's a type.
Yeah.
I worked at a deli with chicken salad, and the lady that goes in for half of the chicken salad does not fuck around.
Oh, dude, there were so many weird, like, stories from that place. Like, this one lady used to get a rotisserie chicken and microwave it so all the juice came out. She'd pour the chicken juice over ice and drink it, and she'd put all of her grocery bags around her so nobody could see her eat the whole chicken.
Whoa.
It was sweet. There's somebody else that, like, took raw meat and would put it in secret spots all over the aisles.
That's just fucked up.
Yeah, they closed.
So she, and I've never been into the natural grocers, but the thing, okay, so this woman, this is actually intriguing to me. she would drain out all the chicken juice.
Yep.
Drink it on the rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, can I have some ice, please?
It was crushed ice also.
Crushed ice.
Mm-hmm.
And she just drank that chicken right up and then had to shame herself. It's like, hey, lady, why don't you take it home?
It's weird, though. I do weird things like that. Like, before, I used to, actually, with Anthony Bourdain, this was my ritual. I'd go get food. I'd come home, close my door, go in my room, and I'd watch Anthony Bourdain and eat my food.
Sure.
That was my ritual.
Okay, that is a far cry from throwing yourself with paper bags in a public
place.
Eating an entire rotisserie chicken, which I have done.
That's very
on several
true.
Occasions.
That's very true.
Definitely. You know, rotisserie chicken was like my go-to young man drunk food.
Oh,
so see? like we didn't have a lot of options as far as like fast food was concerned or whatever. So we'd be like, let's go to the grocery store. This burger's chicken like $5 right now. It's 2 a.m. We would go and everybody would get their own chicken.
Right.
If they had enough, you eat
that shit. It's delicious. You put that sweet Thai chili sauce on it.
Absolutely. That's what my mom used to do. Or whatever's in the fridge. You know right? what I mean? Like, that's hilarious. What are we looking at?
Oh, we're at like 1 hour and 10 minutes.
Good God. Having so much fun.
I talk forever if you want me to.
So, I think we should talk about what you're working on right now.
Okay.
What's going on in the world of Joshua?
Well, I can't say, I'm not actually allowed to say who the client is right now. Oh, shit.
You're going to tell us off mic.
Yep.
But I might, yeah, I mean, I probably, I know, I don't know. But it's a more actually a fashion thing, so.
Okay.
Which is newer for, well, it's actually not that new, but is that all for this give us? Type of client, it is a newer thing, a product shoot, and probably a lifestyle shoot, so.
Wow.
Until the shoot's over, I'm not going to say anything.
It's Matt Damon, isn't it?
But it'll be very fun, and I'm excited and nervous.
All right,
but,
just give us one little tidbit. Can you tell us what this person does for a living?
No.
All right. It's the president. Yeah,
right. I wish. Besides that, actually, my friend Christina and I have been talking about doing a food show together called Bad Breath. Based off of all, like, being the Asian kid and all the food we eat usually gives us the worst breath ever, like kimchi and all that stuff. So we've been kind of, we're dabbling right now with an idea of doing that. Also a couple of other kind of food-related things. So, yeah, I'm trying to use, I want to try to, like, elevate the people in Omaha. I think basically right now there's, you know, there's obviously, like, food critics, you know, and writers or whatever. There's, like, one main food critic in Omaha. But I think it'd be fun to have other, you know, kind of some other voices kind of involved.
Yeah,
too.
I think that template of food critic is getting a little archaic at this point. You know what I mean? Like, it's tricky.
There's probably, I mean, there's a place probably, you know, there's obviously a place for food critics, I think. But I think for Omaha, you know, the more people talking about it will help kind of elevate it. And I'm glad there's people out there doing things. And, but yeah, I will probably be hanging out in a bunch of kitchens. There's a project I have in mind dealing with like portraiture and chefs that I've been thinking about for probably about 1.5 years. So once I have the time, I'm going to start working on that. But most of it's food related. A lot of it also, like there's a project that I want to do relating with food insecurities around. And
what would be a food insecurity?
Well, I guess basically like
that you would consider.
Well, I guess like the lack of food or the lack of quality food in areas. There's, you know, a lot of people who don't know where their next meal is going to come from.
Yeah.
Especially like kids in school. Like, another thing of mine is like, you know, I want people to be fed. I want people to be. I think that's the first place where like, that's where you get your energy. That's where you get, you know, kind of like your. I'm grouchy if I'm not eating. Yeah. Also like. Kind of keeping in mind of waste, especially food waste, and being a food photographer, that's something that's always on my mind is trying to figure out like, okay, after the shoot, how are you not going to waste like pounds and pounds of food or like 30 quarts of ice cream, you know, like where is this going to go?
Sure.
And so I think like I've always had a passion for food. It's something I always grew up with. I'm happy that I have kind of like a job that revolves itself around that, but I would like to use it to kind of help people. You know, whether it's having a show for a charity or anything like that, I'd like to kind of like maybe even collaborate with people on projects.
Well, we'd be open to collaboration. We're all about that, man. Like, and I think it's a real travesty that in a city this size, we have hungry people. You know what I mean? And people that are living in food deserts that are fucking ridiculous. You know,
for like, sure.
This is such a automobile centric town, you know, and I've lived without a car in this city, and it's super hard in like a day like today. It's hot as fuck, you know, and if you got kids or if you're elderly and you got to get to the grocery store and come home, get out of here. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I like with photography, I always ask myself, like, what can I, like, that's really all I feel like at the moment, that's really my main contributor. So I'm like, how can I use this to like kind of help people?
Yeah.
And for the longest time, I thought I couldn't. I was like, oh, I just take pictures. I push a button on the camera, you know? Nice. But I kind of worked. I kind of did a series that just happened by accident, actually. I used to go to this coffee shop all the time called Caffeine Dreams, which most people know. And
R.I.P.
Yeah, I know. That's going to be like some German beer place. But yeah. I did kind of like, before like the apartment I lived in, I did kind of a series called As You Were There, which was like basically all these drunk people at parties. I would round them up and take all their portraits and just kind of like where they're at now. That's the whole point. Is like, so you can look back and this is what you look like. This is where you're at. And so I was at Caffeine Dreams one day and I was trying to work on this new way of editing. And so I had somebody and I was like, hey, can I take your picture, you know, to kind of test this out. And I took their picture and somebody else was like, well, I need like a new profile photo. So I was like, okay, I'll take your photo too. And started kind of doing these things. And I love kind of doing, I guess you'd call it a diptych, which it's like two photos next to each other.
Okay.
And I did kind of just like a front and then a side. Like a profile.
Like a mugshot.
Yeah, basically like a mugshot, yeah. Which a lot of people ended up calling it that. And I ended up kind of just like slowly photographing people that I knew when I was just there working on stuff randomly. And then I was like, you know what? Like, to kind of get out of my comfort level, I'll just start asking people I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I'd only do it if I felt like really drawn, you know, to them. And so at first it was awkward. Like, I hated doing it. Like, it was kind of like, I didn't hate it, but it was just like, I don't typically just go up and I'm like, hey, can I take your picture?
And it's kind of an intimate thing. Like, you're taking a picture of their face.
Yeah.
You know, and like, it's a portrait.
For sure. It is definitely an intimate. That's actually something that I learned like afterwards. And like, you know, as I was taking these photos, like, there's just, it's weird, like, as I'm editing through them, like, trying to find that one, I always it's just like, I'll skim through, like, there. And I'm like, there you are, you know? And it was a really weird experience because being able to see the person, like, in their eyes, like, it's just a really crazy thing. And I learned so much about myself through photographing other people. Yeah. And I didn't even mean for it to be a series. What basically happened was, like, I was kind of doing it, and then people started coming up to me like, hey, can I get a photo for this, your series? And I was like, what series are you talking about? And they're like, you know, the one, you know, whatever. And I realized, like, some people just, like, really wanted their photo taken. Some people wanted to see themselves that way. Like, they almost want, you know, I learned, you know, there's some people that had a terrible day, and they would still let me take their photo. And, you know, it was like maybe a conversation that happened beforehand or after. My good friend Eli ended up, they transitioned from female to male and, or as themselves, you know? It was interesting to be able to take his photo at that time, you know? And so there's just a lot of things. Like, I'm super grateful to have that moment with everyone because it's like, there is a lot that goes into a photo. Like, whenever someone takes my photo, I feel so vulnerable. Like, it's absolutely. Like the most, you know.
Talking about that, it reminds me, and I totally forgot about this, but when I was getting my neck tattooed.
Oh, yeah.
You came and took photos of it. And as vulnerable as you can be, is getting a tattoo needle dug into your neck for an hour and a half. But I remember he documented it, has photos of it.
It's just for me, like, I don't have the best memory, honestly. I have a really terrible memory, so it's nice to have these photos. And like, doing that, like I said, I learned so much about myself. I had a weird moment at Target while I was doing this. Like, I walked into Target and I saw everyone. It was like a super busy day, and I realized, like, I was like, oh my god, all of you are real. Like, I realized, like, everyone around me was real for the first time. Like, it was like a weird moment in my life.
That's interesting.
And it ended up, like, it was like I almost felt like, I'm like, oh my god, like, how do I help all these people? Like,
so do you feel like you, in that moment, which seems to be pretty specific, because you are significant, because you remember where you were.
Target, of all places.
Do you, like, almost like a Neo, you know, stopping the bullet moment, where, like, you just...
It changed my life, yeah.
Like, maybe your empathy had, like, fully... Do you feel like, okay, let me reframe that a little bit. So you said that you, in taking photos of people, you learned a lot about yourself and your maybe vulnerabilities, or, you know, working outside of your comfort space. Mm-hmm. And would you say that throughout that process, your epiphany at Target was really the culmination of that entire experience? Were you connectivity or like maybe you weren't looking at people as just like, I don't know.
It's just so like nonchalant. You just see everyone every day. Like, it's just like whatever.
You were feeling it.
But then you like realize that those people have individual lives that branch into...
It was like all of that at once. Yeah, it was kind of like a weird moment where like there wasn't this wall of like them and me.
Yeah.
It was like we're all just like this weird...
That's almost like a psychedelic
thing. I've never done those types of drugs, but
yeah.
If that's how it is, maybe I'd consider it. I read a couple
books and they said that things like that happen.
Well, it was a really weird... So like there was just like a bunch of stuff like... I know we've been going really long, but... There's a bunch of stuff that just kind of like happened, and I've learned slowly to just let everything go. Like up to this point right now in my life, like I've been learning all these lessons, and photography is this really bizarre tool that's helped me get there. And I think like when I saw everybody, like the first thing, actually, I started having anxiety attacks. Like first, it was kind of a negative thing. I was scared, you know, and I was like,
in a person, how do I, like,
well, it was like when I realized everyone existed in a weird way, I was like, how do I help all of you?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Like, it was almost like I could feel like someone else in a weird way. Like, oh my God, like, are you okay? And I didn't know what to do. So like the next day I was just driving, and this sounds so funny, but I said out loud, I go, let me end up where I need to be. And I ended up at Bed Bath & Beyond. And I ended up talking to this woman, I was like, I didn't know where to go, and I thought about buying a blender, and so I like,
I needed something.
I didn't end up buying anything, but like, okay. I needed an excuse to why I was there. And so I went over to the blenders, and this woman comes up to me and starts talking to me, and I don't know what happened, but I just looked at her, and I go, are you okay? And it was like an urgency, and she looked at me, and she goes, no. And I was like, oh my God. Like, it was just this weird, like, I know I asked the question, but she goes, no, I'm not. And I looked at her, and I don't know what, it was this, and it sounds so crazy, but there's this weird connection where I just looked at her, and I go, do you ever just want to go, like, do you feel like me? Like, what about me? What about me? What about me? And she's like, yeah. And we ended up having this long conversation, and she ended up quitting actually afterwards. But I think like through the conversation, I think maybe that's what she wanted to do.
Yeah.
And so it was just a really strange moment. So
kind of like her It's a Wonderful Life guardian angel.
I don't know. It was like, but she also really helped me too. Okay, you know, it was like a really beautiful like kind of exchange. And I lived in an apartment at the time, and I went outside and I just go, let me help in a way that I can help. Cause I was dealing with anxiety. Like I was like, how do I help the whole, like all these people? And then right when I said that, this old woman, there's a bunch of older ladies that live there, comes out and she goes, hey, can you help me move this recliner? So I was like, sweet, I'll help you move your recliner. So I go to move that. And as I was leaving her place, this other lady opens the door. Like she lived kind of in the basement floor. She goes, can you smell my apartment? She's like, I think there might be a gas leak. So I go down there and that's what happened. And then
was there a gas leak?
I think there was a gas leak. Yeah. So they got that all fixed. And then I went home and I was like, that's cool. You know, I was like, but that's just a coincidence. And I got on Facebook and my buddy Dirk posted about, there's a veteran that had, who somebody, like while he was in the hospital, his apartment got robbed. And so they're looking for people to donate stuff. And I was like, well, I don't really have like tons of money. I don't know what I'd give. I don't know what to do, you know? Yeah. And, but people were looking for people to just go and pick up donations. So I was like, I can do that. You know, I'm like off that next day. So I went and did that. And while I dropped that stuff off, I went over to my mom's house, sort of this whole Target experience that was weird and everything. And I said, I just don't know what to do. I said, because I feel like I need to sell everything and give it all away. I need to, like, you know, I had this weird urgency to just, like take everything, you know.
Monk it up.
Yeah. My mom said, well, she's like, you helped all these people and you were just available.
Mm-hmm.
She was just be available.
Yeah.
And
that's,
I was like,
pretty beautiful.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, my God, like, I just need to be available, you know? And so I'm not always the best at it for sure. Like, but I hope that I'll never be too busy to help people. And I think there's so many things that are going on around us that we aren't seeing. And in relation to the conversation about even Anthony Bourdain and all these things, there's so many people around us that are happy. There's so many people that are sad. There's so many emotions going on. And I think it's good to just kind of keep that reminder of like being available. And that's the kind of the beauty of like, even with like photography or anything like that, no matter what the subject is that I'm photographing, most of the time I'm around people. Mm-hmm. I've just learned so much. Like, that's been my therapy, you know, besides like music or whatever, like that has been my therapy to like kind of find out who I am. Like, in this whole entire spiel of my life where I'm like, I don't know if I'm Chinese, I don't know if I'm American, I don't know, you know, like this whole search for identity, I realized like, yeah, I just am, you know, and that's okay. And I don't know everything, and that's okay, you know. And through this whole entire year, like, I grew up in a very religious background and everything, that's basically what it has all come down to, is like, it's okay to not know everything, but I'm happy to be able to experience everything that I can experience, good or bad. So,
and to be available.
Yeah, and to be available.
Like, that's great, for man. Sure. And I think that's such a unique perspective on, especially photography, because, you know, it's just looked at, like you said, you know, a finger on a button, and it's a one-way street. I take your pick, you know, but like, to hear that, like, you know, the camera almost just seems like more of a medium between the two.
It is.
You know what I
mean?
Like, between what's going on in your world and capturing, you know, what's going on in their world, you know? So I think
it's kind of brilliant. Weird. Like, yeah, I think honestly, even just through this conversation with you guys, I realized like, even the relationship of like alter egos and creating these videos, and I was like sad. And then having this tool where I could even hide myself in a strange way and just let everything in front of that be whatever it is. I think the next thing I should probably work on is to be able to like not even have to have these boundaries, you know?
Yeah, like, that's tricky though.
Yeah.
You know, because like I'm a musician, play shows and stuff, and love dark music and do that. And, you know, like playing, performing live or whatever, like I'm not going to act like that in my everyday life, you know? And it's not like I'm G.G. Allen or something. I don't go in there and roar around the glass or anything, but it definitely... some vicious shit, you know, and I think that's kind of okay, you know.
Yeah, like, for sure.
In the realm of art, I think it's especially if you are, you know, like self-aware enough to know, like, this is my process, this is how this is making me feel, this is the end result, because you have an end result, you're producing things.
Yeah,
you know, it's not a selfish endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
You are, it is your career, but you know, like you said, people will come up to you and say, hey.
For sure.
Can I get my picture taken? You know, like, it's very interesting. Very interesting. I'm definitely walking away with being available. I love that. See, like, I have this mantra that is, you know, hold the door open for the guy behind you or gal behind you or whomever behind you, regardless of anything.
I do that all the, that's all. I
hold the
do
fucking
that.
Door open for that person. You know what I mean? Like, no matter what, like, as the most simple, dumb, say please and thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because that waitress or that or that fucking retail whoever, like, that's huge. Or you could take the Josh Fu route and be like, hey, you okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And then
yeah.
they quit their job and rob a bank.
But I think about that a lot. Like, every time we go to the restaurant, and Missy can maybe attest to this, but, like, I say thank you. You refill my... I say thank you 20 times in a 30-minute meal, you know? Like, I'm constantly saying thank you just because... I want them to feel appreciated. I want them to know that they're important, and you know that, you know, we're
for sure
all here for a reason.
Man, being a bartender for years, and like, I like people. I like conversations. That's why I do this, and I'm interested in people. And you know, like, you don't realize, or maybe I didn't at first, but how much of an impact just an open ear is. You know, and it is such a cliche, bartender listening to your woes or whatever, but I wasn't doing anything else, you know? And it just so happened that I'm interested in people and I like to hear stories and I like to talk about stuff. And when I quit doing that, you know, like, I would hear from old regulars and they would just be like, man, I just miss like coming in and shooting the shit with you. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not like that anymore. And I think that kind of falls in the same vein, like connectivity, empathy, you know, is the only thing that will save the world.
We're pushing an hour and a half. This will be the longest episode. And I just want to say, I fucking love you, Josh.
I got another hour and a half. Let's go. This has been a great episode.
Yeah, man. Josh, seriously, yeah. It's, yeah.
And it's good to finally meet you.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. You too. Yeah. No, I really appreciate it a lot. And, yeah.
So where can people find your stuff? If they want to book you, where can they find you?
Well, I have a website, www.joshuafoo.com. And then on Instagram, it's Josh Foo Loves You. And, that's about it, I think.
All right.
Yeah.
You guys Facebook. Feel good? Feel good?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, man. Okay. And a big thanks to Missy. No, here we go.
Thank you.
Recording and providing beverages and letting us do the show in our house. Hey, everybody. This concludes episode 26 of Omaha Talks. Thank you so much. Thanks again to our Patreon listeners. I swear to God, we got good shit on your way. I swear to God. But all good things take time. You know, sometimes shitty things take time. But it's going to be good. So thanks again. We'll see you.